Good morning, and welcome back to the Rabbit Hole Power Hour. This is the hour of the week dedicated to reading strange, unusual stories from the internet. Could be conspiracy theories, could be strange creatures, could be ancient cultures or civilizations. Pretty much anything that I stumble upon. Today, I got a story about Alalu, the first Anunnaki on Earth. After that will be Germany Parliament advances Mark of the Beast with Agenda ID 2020. After that, we got a story about Klaus Schwab and the Great Reset. And after that, a very detailed explanation of the Great Reset and the New World Order. So four stories coming to you today. Real quick, if you like my show, like what I'm doing, go over to buymeacoffee.com/formatfm. Send me a coffee. Or if you want more things like this, go over to audiomac.com/formatfm. Let's get into this. This comes from inkyspeaks.com. That's spelled inkyspeaks.com. Alalu, first Anunnaki on Earth, condemned and memorialized on Mars. Excerpt from Anunnaki, False Gods. Techno-savvy ETs from the planet Nibiru, who came for gold, created us from their genome to work the mines. Posed as gods, decided to let us drown, but then decided to breed us to work for them. By Sasha Alex Lesson, PhD. PhD in anthropology from UCLA, and Janet Kira Lesson, the CEO of Aquarian Radio. Nibiru's politics scripted Earth. Sirians, advanced beings from the Lyran stars, moved to planets in the Pleiades of Orion's belt 60 million years ago. Homo sapien Pleiadians rocketed to Earth to escape war. Other Lyrans and Pleiadians came to Earth, and warred on Earth too. The first Pleiadians fled back to the Pleiades, and some to Nibiru. Nibirans developed technologically advanced warring nation-states. Around 656,000 years ago, nations of the Nibiru's north and south nuked each other. Nuclear explosions and fallout left many Nibirans sterile and killed a huge percentage of men. To end the war, leaders drew lots for rule of the planet, and Lord of the North won the drawing and was the first king of Nibiru as a unified planet. An wed Antu, royal of the South, to breed the line of royals that runs Nibiru to this day. An created a god, or a gade, the new capital, imposed military rule, hierarchical, male-centered, patrilineal, and issued decrees. Nibiru's capital, Agade. I don't know how that's supposed to be pronounced, but it's spelled A-G-A-D-E, so I'm going to say Agade. Nibiru's military dictatorship, model for Earth. Agade, Nibiru's capital. An ordered men, take principal and secondary wives, official concubines too. His successors set the law of secession. When the king dies, the son of the deceased king, begot with his father's half-sister, succeeds. Nibiru's peril drove miners to Earth. Floating white powder of monoatomic gold, easily made. 500,000 years ago, Nibiru's protective shield weakened. The thick atmosphere thinned. This forced Nibirans to mine Earth for gold, to powder into Nibiru's air, save their atmosphere, and keep the heat that they needed. By the reign of Enshar, the sixth king descended from An. Nibiru's air has thinner been made, the protective shield diminished. Scientists said, Enshar's son, Daru, failed to create a hereditary heir, but the Council of Counselors made his adopted son Lama the king. To Lama, in the Councils of the Learned, to heal the breach in the atmosphere were two suggestions. Use gold within the hammered belt, asteroids, abundant. To finest powder, gold could be ground, lofted high to heaven, suspended could remain. With replenishment, the breach it would heal. Let celestial boats, or rockets, the gold to Nibiru bring over. Let weapons of terror, nukes, be created. The missiles, the volcanoes to attack, their dormancy to bestir, their belching to increase, the atmosphere to replenish, the breach to make disappear. Volcano belches. For a decision, Lama was too feeble. What choice to make, he knew not. Every 3,600 years, Nibiru, as it circled Nemesis and crossed through Solaris's ecliptic, lost more oxygen. For four orbits, Lama vacillated whether he should nuke the volcanoes or send miners to the asteroids. While he pondered, Nibiru's air bled into space. Intense radiation afflicted the planet, but Lama ignored his counselors and instead heeded his wife, Lamaha. She told him, "Beseech the great creator of all." Beseeching, not actings, provides the only hope. Prince Alalu killed King Lama. Prince Alalu, descended from Nibiru's fourth king, Anshurgal, and a concubine, led his fellow princes. "Let Lama the king be no more," he roared. "Let decision supplant hesitation. Come, let us unnerve the king in his dwelling. Let him the throne abandon." The princes rushed to the palace gate, then the throne room. Lama retreated to his tower, where Alalu caught him. "We need a king who acts now. Not you, you dither. I'm taking over now before we lose all our air." Alalu hurled the king from the tower. "Now I'm king." Alalu gave daughter to Ea for fealty from Anu. Anu said he, not Alalu, should rule. Anu descended from King An's youngest son, Inuru, and contested Alalu's claim. Anu said he, as pretender, not Alalu, should rule. Alalu told Anu, "Wed our children, my daughter Damkina, your son Enki. I rule, and civil war we forestall. My crown prince and cupbearer shall you be, always near consulting me." Anu agreed. He canceled the betrothal his daughter Ninma had with Enki, later known as Lucifer, Nibiru's greatest scientist. Anu, now crown prince, had agreed to quit his claim as Lama's successor in favor of Alalu, whose line of descent was from a concubine and a prior king. Anu expected King Alalu to use him as a prime minister, but Alalu treated Anu as a servant, a mere cupbearer, not a crown prince. Instead of Ninma, Enki wed Damkina. Ninma pined for Enki, but sought solace in sex with Anu's heir, her and Enki's half-brother Enlil, the dashing military man. Ninma, Enki's fiancé, forced to by dad, Anu, dropped the engagement. Enlil. When Ninma bore Enlil's son, Ninurta, later known as Isham, Baal, then Mars, "Never for your disobedience will I allow you to wed," he said. Anu, however, did not punish Enlil, his heir. Enlil, who was before the Anu-Alalu marriage deal, would have followed Anu as Nibiru's king, lost his position as Anu's successor to a son he'd make with Alalu's daughter. The first male born they birthed, Anu and Alalu agreed, would rule Nibiru. "One line, our two shall become," said Alalu. Enki and Damkina had a boy, Marduk. When Marduk ruled Nibiru, genes of grandfathers, Alalu and Anu, would both empower him. This pact will in millennia come to fuel wars on Earth. Deal in place, Anu pledged fealty to Alalu. Alalu, now king, made Anu his cupbearer. King Alalu didn't, though he tried, save Nibiru's heir. To raise Overcast to hold Nibiru's heir, he had rockets drop nuclear bombs in Nibiru volcanoes. This, however, did not trigger the ash eruptions Alalu sought. The hole in the atmosphere grew. Alalu explored the gold dust shield option. Earth and its asteroids hold most of the gold in the solar system, so he sent a rocket. The vessel crashed into an asteroid. All aboard died. 9 more Nibiran years, 9 SARs, orbits of Nibiru around the sun, or 32,400 Earth years, passed, and Alalu still hadn't stopped Nibiru's air loss. Anu wrestled and deposed Alalu. Cupbearer Anu seethed when Alalu failed to protect and replenish Nibiru's atmosphere. Once regarded as Nibiru's savior, his attempts to save the planet failed. Nibiru's climate deterioration continued, leading his scientists said to planetary extinction. Anu cited Nibiru law and proclaimed himself rightful king. He challenged Alalu to hand-to-hand combat with bodies naked. Alalu he challenged. Alalu was defeated in combat by acclaim. Anu was hailed as king. Anu to the palace was escorted. Alalu to the palace did not return. From the crowds he stealthily escaped. Of dying like Lama he was fearful. Unbeknownst to others, to the place of the celestial chariots, or rockets, he hurriedly went. Into a missile-throwing chariot, Alalu climbed. Its hatch behind him he closed. The four-part chamber he entered, the commander's seat he occupied. In the celestial boat, Alalu from Nibiru escaped. To snow-hued Earth, Alalu set his course. Alalu nuked to Earth, said God's here, and threatened Nibiru. Alalu nuked asteroids en route to Earth, and 440,000 Earth years ago, landed on marshy land near Basra on the Persian Gulf, and waded ashore. Most of the land Alalu explored rests now under the sea. Two of the rivers he found, the Tigris and Euphrates, still flow through Iraq. But 450,000 years ago, when he arrived, the Tigris and Euphrates joined the Gihon, or Karun River, which ran through Iran and joined the Euphrates. In 2010 CE, ultrasound showed that the merged Tigris, Euphrates, and Gihon further south joined the Pishon River to make the four rivers of Sumer tablets. Sumer's four combined rivers then flowed into the Persian Gulf. Noah's flood of 13,000 years ago, we'll see, buried the Pishon with mud. When Alalu landed, he donned his eagle helmet, or oxygen mask, and wetsuit. He waded ashore, then returned to his rocket and took the helmet off. He extended the rocket's tester, which breathed the planet's air, compatibility it indicated. So ashore again he waded. This time with the handy sampler, the carried weapon, and dark goggles to protect his eyes from sunlight, he found unbearably bright, but now without an eagle's helmet, without a fish's suit. Alalu explored the marsh. His tester indicated gold. He also found fish aplenty, though the water registered undrinkable. He climbed a hill, found edible fruit, and a pond of drinkable water. He shot a snake, a creature absent from Nibiru. The abrupt fall of darkness on Earth startled him. Nibiru's days, or rotation on its axis, stretched much longer. Alalu proved Earth's gold. In the Gulf, Alalu confirmed gold. He targeted Nibiru with missiles. The speaker of words he stirred up. Toward Nibiru, the words to carry. On another world I am. The gold of salvation I have found. The fate of Nibiru is in my hands. To my conditions you must give heed. Return my throne. On Nibiru, the council heard Alalu's demands. Two royal princes, the commanders of the weapons, protected the palace with two divine weapons, the royal hunter and the royal smiter. The gateway to the palace was flanked by eaglemen, uniformed astronauts, with the winged disc emblem of Nibiru centrally displayed. The council heard Alalu's transmission in the throne room where Anu sat on his throne. Sorry about that. Had a knock on the door. I gotta find my place again. Flanked by his foremost son Enlil, seated on the right, and his firstborn son Inki, seated on his left. Anyone present could speak, but Anu's word was final. Enlil impugned Alalu's data. He and the council begged Anu, resist Alalu. Anu had Enlil beam Alalu back. Anu, the king, to you his greetings send, of your well-being to learn he is pleased. He added, prove ample gold on Earth. Inki said he'd rocket to Earth and see if it had enough gold to send miners. If from gold dust of Earth, a shield for Nibiru, its atmosphere to save, said Inki. Let Alalu Earth rule as king. For kingship on Nibiru, let him wrestle Anu. Let me in a chariot, rocket, to Earth journey, a path through the bracelet, asteroids, with water, not fire I shall fashion. On Earth, from the waters, let me the precious gold to obtain. To Nibiru, back it will be sent. So Anu sent son Inki to Earth to mollify Alalu. Inki, since he married Alalu's daughter, could mediate between him and Anu. Inki volunteered to rocket to Earth. To Earth with Inki, Anu also sent Alalu's grandson, pilot Anzu, an astro-navigation expert, and 50 men. Anzu means he who knows the heavens, or astro-navigator. Anzu charted the course toward the sun. Inki had the job half-brother Enlil coveted. Enlil seethed when Inki and Anzu rocketed for Earth. Inki, with water, won Earth. Inki diverted water from the ship's engine cooling system to a water cannon. With it, he blasted rocks from his course through the asteroid belt. Inki zapped asteroid obstacles with water from the cooling system until critical water depleted, Anzu warned. Engine failure imminent. Mars water could save them. Inki, Anzu, and 50 crew landed overheating rocket for water from lake on Mars. Inki and Anzu landed on Mars, which had water and air, too. The water was good for drinking, but the air was insufficient for breathing. They needed their eagle's helmets to breathe. On Mars, they drew water from a lake. Sumerian clay tablets show water on Mars long before 21st century scientists found water traces there. Rocket's water renewed, Inki launched for Earth. Its gold Nibiru's fate for salvation or doom containing. The chariot must its speed reduce, or in Earth's thick atmosphere, it will perish, said Anzu. They circled the planet a few times and slowed before they entered the atmosphere and hurtled towards the solid ground. Gravity pulled them down too fast for a dry landing. 443 years ago, they splashed into the Persian Gulf. Alalu guided them ashore. They heard a speaker. It was Alalu welcoming them. He beamed directions of his whereabouts, and they floated the chariot like a boat towards him, then made their way inland. The oceans narrowed, and land appeared on both sides. Anzu ordered the heroes put on their fish suits. They opened a hatch and descended into the marshes, and attached strong ropes to the chariot so they could pull it to land. Enki built houses at Eridu, the head of the Persian Gulf, near modern Bassara. From Gulf waters, Enki sifted some gold. He made a plane, and with his personal pilot, Abgal, tested all over Earth for more gold. Anu beamed Enki, "Send us Alalu's ship with all gold you gathered." The days of Earth's creation in Genesis cosmicizes the Nibiran prospectors as they set up camp 6 days, then rested on the seventh. Enki hid Alalu's nukes, fired pilot Anzu. Enki and Abgal entered Alalu's rocket. In it, they found 7 nuclear missiles. They hid the nukes in a cave in the African Great Lakes area. Only Enki and pilot Abgal knew the cave's locale. Anzu, the interplanetary pilot and Alalu's grandson, saw no missiles when he came to ready Alalu's rocket to return to Nibiru. Anzu told Enki, "Most missiles Alalu stole to Anu, I must return some. I must fire at rocks in the belt." "This rocket you cannot with such attitude pilot. Radiation missiles must not in planetary space discharge," Enki said. "I replace you, Anzu. Stay on Earth with Alalu. Abgal, who pilots my sky chariot, will return Alalu's rocket to Nibiru." Enki sent Abgal to Nibiru with gold samples. Enki routed a return through the asteroids, and Abgal flew the rocket to Nibiru with sample gold. Scientists processed the sample gold into the finest dust to skyward launch it was hauled away. Ashar, 3,600 years, did the fashioning last. Ashar did the testing continue. With rockets was the dust heavenward carried. By crystal's beams it was dispersed. But when Nibiru near the sun came, the golden dust by its rays disturbed. The healing in the atmosphere dwindled. The breach to bigness returned. Anu sent Abgal to Earth for more gold, and Enki sent him back to Nibiru with the meager gold from the Gulf. Enki and Abgal traced the Persian Gulf's gold to its nearest prime source, the gold lodes, huge veins deep in the rocks of Abzu, or Africa. Jubilant, Enki announced his find to Nibiru. On Nibiru, Enlil, angry that Enki led Mission Earth, demanded Enki prove vast, extractable gold on land. False hope Enki gave already that gold quantity from Earth's waters could Nibiru's atmosphere save, he said. Enlil, the heir, lobbied King Anu to send him to Earth to check on brother Enki. Anu gave in. "You, Enlil, my legal successor, are of Earth, take charge. Gold there, assess for yourself." Enlil rocketed to Earth. He felt empowered as Anu's heir to run, take charge of the expedition if Earth had enough gold. Enlil landed in the Persian Gulf, saw Enki's data, and retested his samples. Enlil beamed back to Nibiru that despite initial doubts, Earth had gold enough to save Nibiru's atmosphere. Nibirans mined and settled Earth. Anu and Lil and Enki drew for Nibiru, Earth, seas, and mining. At Basara, Enki and Enlil disputed authority. "Father Anu," Enlil messaged from Earth to Nibiru, "affirm secession. I, son by your half-sister Antu, rank Enki, though he your eldest be." "Come," Enlil implored, "to Earth and deal with Alalu, too, who claims rule here and over Nibiru, too." So 416,000 years ago, Anu rocketed to Earth to create chain of command and deal with Alalu's threats. On Earth, Anu put three straws in one hand, held them out to Enki and Enlil. "Which of you, my sons, draws the long straw, rules Nibiru. Draw the short straw, and you command Earth. Draw the middle-sized straw, and you run mining and sea transport." By their lots, the tasks they divided. Anu to Nibiru to return, its ruler on the throne to remain. The Eden, Iraq, to Enlil was allotted. To be the lord and command. More settlements to establish, of the skyships and their heroes, charged to take. Of all the lands, until the bar of the seas encounter, the leader to be. Enlil, lord of command, extended King Anu's military dictatorship to Earth. Enlil, who preceded Enki as Anu's successor on Nibiru, now ruled Enki on Earth too. To Enki, the seas and the oceans as his domain were granted. Lands beyond the bar of the waters, by him to be governed. In the Abzu, Africa, to be the master, with ingenuity, the gold to procure. Enlil's first act as commander mollified Ea. Enlil forever gave Enki Eridu, the settlement at Bazara, as well as the title, Enki, Earth's Lord. Before this, Enki had been called Iabe of the waters. Ea is the root of the word earth. Anu beat Alalu, banished him to Mars with Anzu. When Anu and his sons divided rule of Nibiru and Earth, forward toward Anu, Alalu stepped, shouting, "Mastery of Earth to me was allotted. That was the promise when the gold finds to Nibiru I announced. Nor have I the claim to Nibiru's throne forsaken." Anu again wrestled Alalu. They grappled. Anu, on the chest of Alalu, with his foot pressed down, victory in the wrestling, thereby declaring, "I am king." But when Anu lifted his foot from Alalu, swiftly he, the manhood of Anu, bit off. The malehood of Anu, Alalu did swallow. Enlil subdued and tied Alalu while Enki gave Anu first aid. Anu groaned, "Maroon Alalu on Mars I shall. Slowly will he die from my flesh ingested." Anu's flesh killed anyone who ate it. So Anu, en route to Nibiru, left Alalu with food and tools on Mars. On Mars also, Anu left Anzu to tend the ex-king as he died. On Nibiru, Anu ordered freight rockets to shuttle from Earth, Earth's moon, and other planets and satellites between Nibiru and the sun. Ninma saved Anzu on Mars, built Alalu's statue and Mars base. The king sent daughter Ninma with female medical officers to Earth. "On Mars stop," he said. "If Anzu lives, to him give men to there start a base." On Mars, Ninma found Alalu and Anzu dead, but she revived Anzu. To honor Alalu, who found the gold that could save Nibiru, the image of Alalu upon the great rock mountain, Cydonia, with beams they carved. They showed Alalu wearing an eagle's helmet, his face they made uncovered. Before she left Mars for Earth, Ninma, as Anu had ordered, gave Anzu 20 astronauts from her company and told them to build a way station for the gold freighters. Ninma and her doctors left Anzu with the astronauts on Mars. Then she and her doctors rocketed to Earth. They made landfall at Enlil's headquarters. Ninma led a group of heroes toward a faint beam they'd seen as they landed on Mars. The beam took them to Anzu, dead on his back beside a lake. The signal from his helmet activated when our ship came in. Anzu lay motionless. Ninma put a pulsar on his heart. She pulsed life back into his heart. Nothing. Anzu remained lifeless and dead. Next, she took out the emitter. Its life-giving crystal emissions directed on his body. Nothing. No response. Anzu was dead. 60 times the director, she directed the pulsar. 60 times she directed the emitter. On the 60th time the emitter emitted, Anzu lived. He opened his eyes, mouthed the word water. When he could again walk, he led them to a 12-mile-high rock, which protruded heavenward from the plain. Soon after we landed, Anzu said, Alalu began to scream from unremitting pain from his mouth. He was spitting his innards. I could do little to comfort him, his eyes bulging in agony. He peered over the wall to this place. I now must show you. We followed Anzu to a great rock that jutted heavenward from the plains like a mountain. Here I found this great cave, and here's where I hid Alalu's corpse. I covered its entrance with stones, Anzu said. They followed him to the rock, dug away the stones, and went in. They saw the remains of Alalu, he who once ruled Nibiru, now a pile of bones. Let him rest in peace, said Ninma. She released the hatred she'd held for Alalu for hurting her father so terribly. They covered the caves in stone once again so that the entrance would be forever hidden. Alalu's remains honored, never disturbed, she hoped. She opened the penetration beam on the miles-high rock outcrop that would memorialize Alalu. Technicians finished molding Alalu's head. Faceplate pulled back, gazing at Earth. Let the image of Alalu gaze forever upon the Earth, where he showed us the gold that will save Nibiru, she said. She prayed the Prime Creator and Alalu's ancestors honor him in the interlife. Ninma turned to Anzu. 20 heroes shall remain with you, and you will build on Mars the way station for Earth's gold. Rockets from Earth will deliver ore to Mars. Refine it here to white monoatomic powder and rocket it off to Nibiru. Hundreds of heroes will make Mars their home, and you, Anzu, will commander them. There beside the Martian lake, Anzu declared, My life I owe you, great lady, and to your father, King Anu, I pledge my loyalty. Ninma felt a pang. She distrusted Anzu. Supplies delivered, formalities over, the chariot lifted from the surface of Lamu and rejoined with the rocket ship orbiting above. Toward the Earth, it continued its journey. With great anticipation, Ninma contemplated the reunion with her dear brothers. With each, she has her karma. The giant gods of the ancient world and the rulers they choose created mindsets that shackle us to short, desperate lives. These so-called gods rocketed to Iraq from a planet that they called Nibiru. The Nibirans who came to Earth called themselves Anunnaki, which means those who descended to Earth from the sky. The Anunnaki who bade us call them gods stand way taller and live way longer than we do. They said they bred us as short-term slaves and soldiers. We killed in their names. Allah, or in Sumerian, Nanar, Yahweh, sometimes Enlil, sometimes Adad or Enki, and Ishtar, or Inanna. Mining expedition personnel all Nibirans. They bred us to slave in mines, armies, businesses, schools, governments, farms, factories, brothels, and building projects. The gods made us serve them and the royal lines of ever-murderous hybrid rulers and priests, the elite they begot. The ruling elite, the gods left us to govern us, keep us warring with weapons and trade. The elite give all sides credit to arm and trade. They also run religions to bring back the god of their faith and defeat the gods and followers of other faiths. Zicharia Sitchin, Neil Freer, Lord Pai, Michael Tellinger, Andy Lloyd, Michael Cremo, and Richard reveal the slavery and genocide the gods, our ET genitors, perpetrated. The truth we review in the Anunnaki, false gods, ends the power of the lies of rulers to impoverish us. We see how the elite manipulate us to war. How the matrix they modeled makes us recklessly exploit our resources and pollute our environment. They see that we never feel our unity as a planet of peace. Lies of church and state hide technology, knowledge of our ET heritage, and information about the Galactic Federation. At last, we see Yahweh and Allah murdered masses. They and Marduk hated women. These Nibirans lacked compassion, showed no love, certainly exhibited no divinity. When we embrace the oneness of all earthlings and stop warring, our allies among the gods can show us the advanced astronomy, medicine, energy, rocket science, and survival strategies we need now, as space debris nears Earth. We can forgive them and synergize our gifts and theirs. And that story comes to you from EnkiSpeaks.com. What does everybody think about that? All right, seems like everybody likes it in the chat. Quick second, and then I will start the next story. As a quick disclaimer, all stories shared are the opinions of the authors. Any allegations, accusations are those of the author alone. Moving on. From humansarefree.com, this is Germany Parliament Advances Mark of the Beast with Agenda ID 2020 Ratification by Ethan Huff. On January 29th, the German Parliament moved to ratify Agenda ID 2020, a centralized data collection program that will be used to roll out the final mark of the beast and enslave all of humanity forever. While it still has to be approved by the German Federal Council, reports indicate that Agenda ID 2020 will likely run into minimal resistance from here on out, and it will eventually pass. Under the program, the private data of all Germans, and eventually all humans, will be made available to every government agency, police department, and private sector company that wants it. It covers all that is known about an individual citizen, now up to 200 points of information, and possibly more as time goes on. From your bank account, to your shopping habits, health records, vaccination records, your political inclinations, and probably even your dating habits, and other entries into your private sphere. This is from Peter Koenig for Global Research from Canada. Designed by none other than Bill Gates, Agenda ID 2020 is part of a larger vaccination package, sponsored and supported by the Rockefeller Foundation, Accenture, the World Economic Forum, and the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, now referred to as the Vaccine Alliance. Rockefeller Foundation's Operation Lockstep, under the guise of a pandemic, we will create a prison state. Bill Gates played a big role in developing the Mark of the Beast vaccines for global control. The Vaccine Alliance, the headquarters of which is located in Geneva, Switzerland, a widely recognized locale of deep state activity, is another creation of Bill and Melinda Gates. It is located right next door to the World Health Organization headquarters and is considered to be a public-private partnership. The public part being World Health Organization, plus a number of developing countries, Koenig notes. Other private partners include pharmaceutical giants Johnson & Johnson, GlaxoSmithKline, Merck and Company, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Not everyone in Germany is on board with Gates' plan, including Dr. Rainer Fulmich, co-founder of the Corona Commission, a consortium of medical doctors, virologists, immunologists, lawyers, and university professors. Dr. Fulmich is concerned that Wuhan coronavirus vaccines from the likes of Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna may contain hidden nanoparticles that could be accessible via electromagnetic radiation, such as the kind released by 5G and soon to be 6G. We already know that Gates & Co. has been busy working on the vaccine technologies that will be paired with microchips and other New World Order paraphernalia for global control. It is entirely within the realm of possibility that such technology is already fully developed and hidden within the remedies being offered for the Chinese virus. Switzerland is already using such technology that comes with a built-in, all-electronic identification platform. The Swiss government has reportedly outsourced management of its Agenda ID 2020 program to the private sector, meaning large corporations will be in charge of handling the data. At some point, the vaccines offered by the likes of Bill Gates will openly contain this technology. For now, the deep state wants us all to think that people are simply getting vaccinated for Chinese germs, including with secret vaccines hidden within Chinese virus test kits. Gates has already openly admitted that the plan is to have every person on the earth, except himself, of course, vaccinated for the Chinese virus. All roughly 7 billion people will also get an ID chip inserted into their bodies, which will help the elitists better manage their global herd. With an electromagnetic field and with 5G, 6G electromagnetic waves allowing inputs and access of data in your body, the control of each individual is almost complete, warns Koenig. The almost refers to the planned access to your brain waves. Okay, and moving right along, we have Klaus Schwab. The Great Reset will lead to implantable microchips that will read your thoughts. By Paul Joseph Watson. And this is from humansarefree.com. Globalist Klaus Schwab made it clear that transhumanism is an integral part of the Great Reset. When he said that the Fourth Industrial Revolution would lead to a fusion of our physical, digital, and biological identity, which in his book he clarifies is implantable microchips that can read your thoughts. As we highlighted earlier, the Great Reset is attracting a deluge of fresh attention in the aftermath of the coronavirus pandemic, which Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said was an opportunity for a reset. The agenda is primarily based around dismantling the current capitalist system in favor of greater centralized technocrat rule, which will lead to lower living standards, less fuel consumption, fewer civil liberties, and the accelerated automation of jobs. However, another key aspect to the Great Reset, or the Fourth Industrial Revolution, as Schwab calls it, is merging man with machine. What the Fourth Industrial Revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, digital, and biological identity, Schwab told the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. Schwab went on to explain how his book, Shaping the Future of the Fourth Industrial Revolution, was particularly popular in China, South Korea, and Japan, with the South Korean military alone purchasing 16,000 copies. In the book, Schwab explains with excitement how upcoming technology will allow authorities to intrude into the hitherto private space of our minds, reading our thoughts and influencing our behavior. He goes on to predict that this will provide an incentive for law enforcement to implement Minority Report-style pre-crime programs. As capabilities in this area improve, the temptation for law enforcement agencies and courts to use techniques to determine the likelihood of criminal activity, assess guilt, or even possibly retrieve memories directly from people's brains will increase, writes Schwab. Even crossing a national border might one day involve a detailed brain scan, to assess an individual's security risk. Schwab also waxes lyrical about the transhumanist utopian dream shared by all elitists, which will ultimately lead to the creation of human cyborgs. Fourth Industrial Revolution technologies will not stop at becoming part of the physical world. Around us, they will become part of us. Indeed, some of us already feel that our smartphones have become an extension of ourselves. Today's external devices, from wearable computers to... Today's external devices, from wearable computers to virtual reality headsets, will almost certainly become implantable in our bodies and brains. Schwab also openly endorses something the media still claims is solely a domain of discussion for conspiracy theorists, namely, active implantable microchips that break the skin barrier of our bodies. The globalist hails the arrival of implanted devices that will likely also help to communicate thoughts normally expressed verbally through a built-in smartphone, and potentially unexpressed thoughts or moods by reading brainwaves and other signals. So in other words, the fusion of our physical, digital, and biological identity relates to the transhumanist singularity and a future where people have their every movement tracked and every thought read by an implantable microchip. It isn't a conspiracy theorist when they're openly telling you what they want to do. And that was from Paul Joseph Watson at humansarefree.com. Big shout out to them. And I've got one more story today. One more story. Our last story today is another one from humansarefree.com. And this is very detailed explanation of the Great Reset and the New World Order. What is this Great Reset we're now hearing about? In a nutshell, the Great Reset refers to a global agenda to monitor and control the world through digital surveillance. As explained by journalist James Corbett in his October 16, 2020 Corbett report, the Great Reset is a new social contract that ties every person to it through an electronic ID linked to your bank account and health records, and a social credit ID that will end up dictating every facet of your life. New World Order. It's about getting rid of capitalism and free enterprise and replacing them with sustainable development and stakeholder capitalism. Terms that belie their nefarious, anti-humanity intents. As noted in the book Technocracy, The Hard Road to World Order, sustainable development is technocracy. The sustainable development movement has taken careful steps to conceal its true identity, strategy, and purpose. But once the veil is lifted, you will never see it any other way. Once its strategy is unmasked, everything else will start to make sense. The grand plan. In her blog post titled The Great Reset for Dummies, Tessa Lena summarizes the purpose behind the call for a global reset. The mathematical reason for the Great Reset is that, thanks to technology, the planet has gotten small, and the infinite expansion economic model is bust. But obviously, the super wealthy want to continue staying super wealthy, and so they need a miracle, another bubble, plus a surgically precise system for managing what they perceive as their limited resources. Thus, they desperately want a bubble providing new growth out of thin air, literally, while simultaneously they seek to tighten the peasants' belts. An effort that starts with behavioral modification, aka resetting the Western peasants' sense of entitlement to high life standards and liberties. The psychological reason for the Great Reset is the fear of losing control of property and the planet. I suppose if you own billions and move trillions, your perception of reality gets funky, and everything down below looks like an anthill that exists for you. Just ants and numbers, your assets. Thus, the practical aim of the Great Reset is to fundamentally restructure the world's economy and geopolitical relations based on two assumptions. One, that every element of nature and every life form is a part of the global inventory managed by the allegedly benevolent state, which in turn is owned by several suddenly benevolent wealthy people via technology. And two, that all inventory needs to be strictly accounted for, be registered in a central database, be readable by a scanner, and easily ID'd, and be managed by AI using the latest science. The goal is to count and then efficiently manage and control all resources, including people, on an unprecedented scale, with unprecedented digital precision, all while the masters keep indulging, enjoying vast patches of conserved nature, free of unnecessary sovereign peasants and their unpredictability. Global asset relocation will not benefit the people. These new global assets can also be turned into brand new financial instruments that can then be traded. An example of this was given by Vandana Shiva, PhD, in my interview with her. In it, she explained how India is headed towards zero-budget natural farming, a brand new concept of farming in which farmers trade the carbon rate in their soil on the global market if they want to make a living. They'll get no money at all for the crops they actually grow. There's not a single area of life that is left out of this Great Reset plan. The planned reform will affect everything from government. The planned reform will affect everything from government, energy and finance, to food, medicine, real estate, policing, and even how we interact with our fellow human beings in general. Privacy protections, of course, are a major hurdle in this plan, which is why every effort is made to get people to loosen their views on the right for privacy. In the U.S., we also have the Constitution that stands in the way, which is why efforts to undermine, circumvent, ignore, or nullify it are increasing. To sum it up, the desired end result is a giant, joyless, highly controlled global conveyor of everything and everybody, where privacy is tremendously expensive, dissent is unthinkable, and spiritual submission is mandatory. It's like a 24/7 medicated reality, except the medications are both chemical and digital, and they are reporting you back to the mothership, which can then punish you for bad behavior by, say, blocking your access to certain places or putting a hold on your digital bank account, perhaps without any human intervention at all. Stakeholder capitalism. An October 5th, 2020 Winter Oak article addressed the technocratic fascist vision of Professor Klaus Schwab, founder and executive chairman of the World Economic Forum, who wrote the book on the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Schwab announced the World Economic Forum's Great Reset initiative in June 2020, which includes stripping all people of their privately owned assets. In addition to being a staunch technocrat, Schwab also has a strong transhumanist bend, and he has spoken of a near future in which humans merge with machines, and in which law enforcement will be able to read our mind. Winter Oak, a British nonprofit social justice organization, points out that Schwab and his globalist accomplices are using the COVID-19 pandemic to bypass democratic accountability, to override opposition, to accelerate their agenda, and to impose it on the rest of humankind against their will. This is no conspiracy theory. The plan is out in the open. As noted by Time magazine, the COVID-19 pandemic has provided a unique opportunity to think about the kind of future we want. The same statement has been delivered by a number of politicians and organizations around the world in recent months. Schwab's book, COVID-19, The Great Reset, also urges industry leaders and decision makers to make good use of the pandemic and not letting the crisis go to waste. Incidentally, the owner of Time Magazine and founder of Salesforce, Mark Benioff, is also a board member of the World Economic Forum, so he's clearly familiar with the reset plan. The problem is that while the plan is being sold as a way to finally make life fair and equitable for all people, the required sacrifices do not apply to the technocrats running the system. Ultimately, the Great Reset will result in two tiers, or people: the technocratic elite, who have all the power and rule over all assets, and the rest of humanity, who have no power, no assets, and no say-so in anything. While technocracy is not a political system, but an economic one, in practical terms it does resemble fascism. None of it is being sold under the banner of fascism, of course. Instead, they use financial terms like stakeholder capitalism, described by Forbes magazine as the notion that a firm focuses on meeting the needs of all its stakeholders, customers, employees, partners, the community, and society as a whole. In the same article, Forbes points out that this strategy has already been tried and failed. It failed because balancing conflicting stakeholder claims was near impossible and only led to mass confusion and poor returns. The failure of this strategy is what led big businesses to focus on maximizing shareholder value instead. Now, at a time when big business finds itself under attack for single-mindedly shoveling money to its shareholders and its executives at the expense of customers, employees, the environment, and society as a whole, the answer, they say, is to return to stakeholder capitalism. But if it did not work before, what makes us think it will work now? A November 9th, 2020 article in The Defender, a new media platform by the Children's Health Defense, also points out the problems with the World Economic Forum's Great Reset Plan for the food industry. The architects of the plan claim it will reduce food scarcity, hunger and disease, and even mitigate climate change. But a closer look at the corporations and think tanks the WEF, World Economic Forum, is partnering with to usher in this global transformation suggests that the real motive is tighter corporate control over the food system by means of technological solutions. Aside from the food industry, partners include data mining giants, telecommunications, weapons manufacturers, finance, drug companies, and the biotechnology industry. Looking at that list, it should come as no surprise that the World Economic Forum insists the future of food and public health hinges on genetically modified organisms, laboratory-grown protein, drugs and industrial chemicals. To further the fake food takeover, the World Economic Forum has partnered with the EAT Forum, which will set the political agenda for global food production. The EAT Forum was co-founded by the Wellcome Trust, which in turn was established with the financial help of GlaxoSmithKline. EAT currently collaborates with nearly 40 city governments across Africa, Europe, Asia, North and South America, and Australia, maintains close relationships with imitation meat companies such as Impossible Foods, which was co-founded by Google, Jeff Bezos, and Bill Gates. As noted by The Defender, the ultimate aim is to replace wholesome, nutritious foods with genetically modified lab creations. To this end, EAT is working with the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, to establish global dietary guidelines and sustainable development initiatives. The Planetary Health Diet, developed by EAT, is a diet that is supposed to replace all others. Frederick Leroy, a food scientist and biotechnology professor at University of Brussels, told The Defender the diet aims to cut the meat and dairy intake of the global population by as much as 90% in some cases, and replaces it with lab-made foods, cereals, and oil. Vandana Shiva, PhD, has raised harsh critique against the proposed diet, saying it's not about nutrition at all. It's about big business, and it's about a corporate takeover of the food system. The Defender adds, according to EAT's own report, the big adjustments the organization and its corporate partners want to make to the food system are unlikely to be successful if left up to the individual, and the changes they wish to impose on societal eating habits and food require reframing at the systemic level with hard policy interventions that include laws, fiscal measures, subsidies and penalties, trade reconfiguration, and other economic and structural measures. But Shiva said this is the wrong approach, because all of the science shows that diets should be centered around regional and geographical biodiversity. She explained that EAT's uniform global diet will be produced with Western technology and agricultural chemicals. Forcing this onto sovereign nations by multinational lobbying is what I refer to as food imperialism. The future of food and healthcare. You can get a feel for where the future of food is headed by analyzing the World Economic Forum's Strategic Intelligence Map. As you can see, this top-down approach ties food production to a wide range of sectors, including biotech, the chemical industry, artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things, and the digital economy. For more details on Schwab and the World Economic Forum's Strategic Intelligence Plan, see Covert Geopolitics article titled Breaking Down the Global Elite's Great Reset Master Plan. The future of food. If any of this raises your concern, you're probably not going to like what the World Health Economic Forum has in store for healthcare reform either. As detailed on their website, our current capital-intensive hospital-centric model is unsustainable and ineffective. The platform for shaping the future of health and healthcare leverages a data-enabled delivery system and virtual care, integrated across the continuum of care from precision, prevention, to personalized care delivery. Aiding the World Economic Forum in this healthcare transformation are the biggest corporate criminals in the history of the modern world, including Bill Gates, AstraZeneca, Bayer, Johnson & Johnson, Merck, Pfizer, Novartis, and a host of others. These companies have at various times been found guilty of all sorts of crimes that they have paid tens of billions of dollars in fines for. They are also loaded with conflicts of interest in nearly every venture they are involved in. Yet we're now supposed to believe these companies are going to put aside their profit incentives and fix the whole system? As noted in a July 21, 2020, World Economic Forum article, the economic devastation caused by COVID-19 pandemic shutdowns has the potential to hobble global prosperity for generations to come. The answer is to come up with stimulus measures such as infrastructure development that can allow countries to move forward. But while at it, countries are urged to make sure the economic system is built back better. Make no mistake, this catchy slogan is part and parcel of the Great Reset Plan and cannot be separated from it. No matter how altruistic it may sound, as reported by Fox News, a radical movement called the Great Reset, embraced by some Democrats, poses a grave threat to liberty and free markets in the United States and around the world. The Great Reset is perhaps the biggest danger to capitalism and individual rights since the collapse of the Soviet Union. It would destroy the current capitalist system and replace it with progressive and modern socialist systems, with a special emphasis placed on eco-socialist policies. Policy ideas offered by Great Reset advocates include government-provided basic income programs, universal health care, massive tax increases, and the Green New Deal. For example, at a campaign event on July 9th, Biden said we need to end the era of shareholder capitalism. A major part of the Great Reset proposal that would alter how companies are evaluated, elevating social justice causes and climate change concerns over property rights. The Build Back Better plan comes straight from the Great Reset's playbook. As recently as July 13th, the World Economic Forum promoted Building Back Better through green infrastructure programs as part of the Great Reset. Part of the Building Back Better is to shift the financial system over to an all-digital currency system, which in turn is part of the system of social control, as it can easily be used to incentivize desired behaviors and discourage undesired ones. An August 13, 2020 article on the Federal Reserve website discusses the supposed benefits of a central bank digital currency. There's general agreement among experts that most major countries will implement a central bank digital currency within the next 2 to 4 years. Many uninformed people believe that these new banks and currency systems will be very similar to existing cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, but they would be mistaken. Bitcoin is decentralized and a rational strategy to opt out of the existing central bank controlled systems. While these central bank digital currencies will be centralized and completely controlled by the central banks and will have smart contracts that allow the banks to surveil and control your life. The Great Reset PsyOps Guide. It goes without saying that to achieve the kind of radical transformation of every part of society has its challenges. No person in their right mind would agree to it, aware of all the details of the whole plan. So to roll this out, they had to use psychological manipulation, and fear is the most effective tool that there is. As explained by psychiatrist Dr. Pete Bregan, there's an entire school of public health research that focuses on identifying the most effective ways to frighten people into accepting desired public health measures. By adding confusion and uncertainty to the mix, you can bring an individual from fear to anxiety, a state of confusion in which you can no longer think logically. And in this state, you are more easily manipulated. The following, Technocracy and the Great Reset. Social engineering is central to technocratic rule. In closing, keep in mind that technocracy is inherently and technologically society run through social engineering. Fear is but one manipulation tool. The focus on science is another. Anytime someone dissents, they're simply accused of being anti-science. And any science that conflicts with the status quo is declared debunked science. The only science that matters is whatever the technocrats deem to be true, no matter how much evidence there is against it. We've seen this firsthand during this pandemic, as big tech has censored and banned anything going against the opinions of the World Health Organization, which is just another cog in the technocratic machine. If we allow this censorship to continue, the end result will be nothing short of devastating. We simply must keep pushing for transparency and truth. We must insist on medical freedom, personal liberty, and the right to privacy. One fight in particular that I don't see us being able to evade is the fight against mandatory COVID-19 vaccinations. If we don't take a firm stand against that and fight for the right to make our own choice, there will be no end to the medical tyranny that will follow, as noted in the covert geopolitics article. As you may have guessed, the most important anchor of recovery is for a COVID-19 vaccination. The implication is that, without a vaccine, the world will be unable to return to any sense of normality, particularly in terms of open interaction with your fellow man. You can actually participate in the global efforts to cripple the deep state, organized criminal cabal's ability for genocide, while enjoying healthcare freedom at the same time, by simply boycotting Big Pharma for good. By Dr. Joseph Mercola, author of Fat for Fuel, a revolutionary diet to combat cancer, boost brain power, and increase your energy. From the author, The existing medical establishment is responsible for killing and permanently injuring millions of Americans. But the surging numbers of visitors to Mercola.com since I began the site in 1997, we are now routinely among the top 10 health sites on the internet. And that convinces me that you, too, are fed up with their deception. You want practical health solutions without the hype, and that's what I offer. And this article comes to you from humansarefree.com. And that is all I've got for you today. So, please do me a favor. Head on over to buymeacoffee.com/formatfm. If you like what I do and want it to improve, that's the way to do it, because any money given there is actually not going to go to coffee. It's going to buy me a new microphone, maybe some new stuff to record with. I don't know. So check it out. Also, if you want other things that I've done, it's on audiomac.com/formatfm. Thanks for joining me. Let me know what you think of all these stories. And as always, talk to you later and have a great day.